In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And you put us together, give us a little nectar. Let us collect pollen with the hair on our bodies, and you have stuff you should know.
That'd be a lot of pollen, you know?
Yeah.
We'd be honey-making fools.
Yeah. You would be best at is Robin Williams.
Oh, man, that guy's scary.
Yes.
He would be a honey-making fool.
How you doing?
Well, sir, how are you?
I'm pretty good. It's a little early.
It is.
It is. But you feeling good?
Yeah, man, I love recording in the mornings.
Yeah?
Been up since 6 a.m., reading about bees.
Yeah. Well, this is I can imagine you could have gotten up at 4 or 5 because it's like the most extensive article in the universe.
It is.
How bees work. It's a Tracy Wilson joint. So it's
thorough
and exhaustive
and
exhausting.
Yes.
But it's a good one, dude. I love bees.
Do you?
Yeah.
I hate bees.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because they sting. They hurt. They make me get up at 6 a.m.
You don't think they're fascinating creatures?
Yeah, it doesn't mean I like them.
Oh, okay. Well, you got to talk about them anyway. How about that? I don't really have much of an intro, which is probably for the best because this is a really long episode.
There's a lot of facts.
Yeah, there are.
And parts and things.
Let's talk bees, man. How long have they been around?
Bees have been around for a gazillion years. they've been around for a long time. Ancient Egyptians, in fact, thought they were sort of magical creatures that the sun god Ra cried down upon the earth.
Yeah.
Which is fanciful.
And that's where bees came from.
But that's not where they came from.
No. The San people think that we came from bees of the Kalahari, the San people.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they have this creation myth that a bee was carrying a manis across the desert.
Uh-huh.
Got tired. Died. Before it died, it laid some eggs in the mantis, and then that became the first human. And that's where we came from.
I'd buy that.
Really?
Sure, why not? a lot of people used to think that, including beekeepers, that they reproduced spontaneously. They didn't like have intercourse to do so. And this was true until the mid-1600s when a very cool dude named Jam Swammerdam examined bees under a microscope and saw little reproductive parts.
Yeah.
We got it all wrong.
He went,
oh, and I'm Jam Swammerdam.
Yeah, that's a pretty great name.
It's a great name.
The Dutch are good at that.
Is that what he was?
It's gotta be.
You think? Swammerdam? Yeah.
Jam Swammerdam?
Probably so. And there are like 20,000 species of bees, but we're gonna concentrate mainly on honeybees.
Yeah, mostly.
A little bit of, what are the other ones? Not the bumblebees, but well, we'll talk a little bit about bumblebees, too.
Yeah, pretty much those two.
Yeah.
But mostly honeybees. They're the most studied. I think they're the most fascinating.
But social and non... And I don't want to say antisocial.
solitary?
Yeah, solitary bees.
Antisocials may be a way to describe it.
But those are two categories that we're going to dive into.
Yeah. So, surprisingly, bees go back even further than the ancient Egyptians. The oldest bee fossil that they found is about 100 million years old, and they think that at some point around then, during the Cretaceous period, bees diverged from wasps.
Yeah.
Not necessarily from wasps. It doesn't mean that bees evolved from wasps, but that
right.
possibly they shared a common wasp-like ancestor.
I bet that was creepy.
Man, and I'll bet it was like 8 feet long,
some
too.
Ancient super wasp.
Yeah.
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 And this is about the same time, too, not coincidentally, when flowering plants started doing their thing. Before this, if you wanted to, you know, do the tree thing, you had to plant thing, you had to do like what conifers do, dropping your cones and counting on the wind and nature to do your work.
Yeah, which may or may not work.
But thankfully, bees came along and they said, hey, you know what? We can help take your pollen, Mr. Flower.
Yeah, so bees and flowering plants, angiosperms,
yeah.
co-evolved. And that was a big step for bees. They're kind of like the sweet philosophy majors of the wasp family. They just went off and became herbivores.
Yeah.
Whereas their wasp relatives or wasp cousins were carnivores. And not only carnivores that used ovipositors to lay their eggs in other animals,
in
other
meat.
Bugs.
Yeah, that's gross.
It is, and it's very aggressive.
Yeah.
But as we said, bees became herbivores. They mm-hmm. just go around to flowers. All they want is to just be left alone, collect pollen and nectar, and then, pollinate flowers along the way.
Sure.
And they're very happy with their lives like that. They're into the pan flute and Birkenstocks.
You think bees are like hippies?
A little bit.
Yeah. You've never been attacked by a dozen
hippies?
No, actually more than a dozen. I was stung a dozen times.
Is that right?
I told that story before in the Colony Collapse podcast. When I was tagged in the head and face 12 times.
Oh, yeah, that rings a bell.
One of my worst days.
Yeah.
Very painful. So let's talk about parts. The bee's body is pretty remarkable. It's got an exoskeleton
mm-hmm.
made of chitin, movable mm-hmm. plates of this chitin.
Yeah, it's almost like a suit of armor, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat.
They've got, like we said, a lot of hairs all over their body, little fuzzies that they collect the pollen,
mm-hmm.
help regulate body temp, keep it cool or warm, depending on what's going on. And like a lot of insects, they're divided into little sections.
Right.
The head, the thorax, and the abdomen in this case.
Right.
And the brain is in the head.
And it's not a big brain.
No, but it's pretty awesome.
Well, yeah, because it's specialized.
Yeah.
So a bee brain has about 950,000 neurons.
That seems like a lot for a small insect.
It does.
And a small brain.
Right. But apparently it's not. And the reason why we know it's not is because just based on the number of neurons, bees should be incredibly stupid and very simple animals, and they're not. The reason why is because the neurons in a bee's head are extremely specialized, and rather than being recruited by some like executive function like we have
yeah.
in our frontal lobes, their neurons kind of act on their own and communicate with other neurons to carry out a very specific activity.
Yeah.
Right? So this division of labor in the brain allows bees to do a lot of stuff that it would require a bigger brain to do normally. It's pretty ingenious.
Yes, that's right. Bees were pretty smart when they figured out how to do this
right.
to themselves.
Yeah.
They have a couple of sensory antennae, 5 eyes, 3 of them are simple, a cilli, and then 2 compound eyes. And they have lots of repeating parts called ommatidia.
I think so.
And they can actually see polarized light. They specialize in patterns. And humans can't do that, obviously.
No.
We would be like...
Just try.
The predator, maybe? Is that what that looks like?
That's thermal imaging.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's thermal.
Polarized would be...
You can wear polarized glasses.
Exactly. Yeah. Like your polarized sunglasses.
Oh, yeah, remember those? Before I got the Ray-Bans.
Yeah, instead of Ray-Ban, it said polarized.
Polarized.
Yeah.
That's what you get for $8
yeah.
at CVS.
But they worked. You had them forever.
Yeah, until they broke.
So that's how you saw polarized light. Bees don't even need sunglasses from CVS.
No.
They just see it naturally. And the reason this is important is because, as we'll see later on, they use the sun to navigate. And being able to see polarized light, that means they can see clear through clouds
yeah.
when it's overcast and know where the sun is.
That's right.
Very important.
Like a lot of insects, I got the little mouth parts. I know we've talked about mouth parts, I think, in fleas maybe.
Flies?
Flies.
Yeah.
Flies and fleas. They have the jaws or the paired mandibles, the tongue or the glossa, and then the lips, which are the labrum and the maxilla.
Mm-hmm.
And they support the proboscis, which I think most people know is the pollen sniffing device.
And collecting.
Yeah. Well, when I mean sniff, I mean sniff it up in there.
Yeah, it's like an aardvark's trunk.
Yeah, pretty much.
But instead of huffing ants, it huffs nectar, right?
That's right. You got two pair of wings.
Right.
You got three pair of legs. The wings are actually part of the skeleton, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're a little boy that's tearing wings off of a bee, you're actually breaking its skeleton.
You need a spanking.
You need to get stung.
Oh, yeah. That's
how you learn that lesson.
Poetic justice.
Exactly. And a row of hooks called the hamuli connect the wings, so they are just beating together in synchronicity.
But they don't connect all the time. They're not fused together. The wings are separate. Front fore wings and rear wings are separate.
Yeah.
And then when they really want to get going flying, they hook together using the hamuli.
And that's to fly, though.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll really take off.
Oh, like they have different speeds of flying?
Yeah.
And they connect or disconnect?
Yeah.
Depending on that?
Yeah.
Oh, Tracy skipped that part. So much for thorough. And then you got the legs, which, starting from the body working out, you have the coxa, the trochanter, the femur, the tibia, and the tarsus, aka hip, thigh, shin, foot. And that's the body for the most part.
Yeah, but the legs are also kind of specialized. They're almost like Swiss Army legs. It's pretty cool. They've got different kinds of hair.
Yeah.
You've got brush hair, comb hair, depending on the kind of pollen you're collecting,
mm-hmm.
and then basket-like hairs that hold pollen. You've got a pad and a claw, so you can, like, grab things.
Yeah.
You can strangle other bees if you want.
Really?
You're a bee. And this is kind of cool. There's a small groove in the arm, in the leg, for scraping pollen from the antenna. And then, lastly, there's a press on the bottom for packing pollen into things. That's pretty neat, if you ask me.
That is pretty neat.
Swiss Army leg.
Is that what you call it?
That's what I call it.
Very nice. You should put a patent on that.
So, yeah. So, Chuck, when you accidentally squish a bee and you look down at it and its guts are everywhere, it's not red. The blood isn't red. And actually, it doesn't necessarily have what we would call blood. It's called hemolymph. And it has oxygen just suspended in it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have red blood cells, which is why bee blood hemolymph is clear.
Yeah. You don't see a lot of insects with red blood, do you?
Only Americans.
Red-blooded insects.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we can't overlook the stinger. That is where the bee's abdomen is, and it's an appendage. And like we said before, it's a egg depositor, an ovipositor. And then the lancets will sting you and deliver venom from the poison sac and a venom gland. And once again, these wasp-like ancestors, they think that's where the bees got the venom, and it's just a leftover trait from that, even though they didn't go on to lay their eggs in meat.
Right, which is why the wasps evolved venom to subdue their prey while they were laying eggs and eating them and all that stuff. And bees, like you said, had it left over, but they just have it for defense.
Yeah, and I guess it was obviously a trait worthy of keeping.
Sure.
And like if I had a stinger and could inject people with venom, I'd keep it around.
Sure.
Use it on occasion.
You'd be like, come on, evolution, just let me have it.
Exactly. There are stingless bees, though, quite a few species, and they don't have stingers at all.
No, and they were very handy among the Maya until very recently for beekeeping, because you just stick your hand in there and be like, I'm taking your honey, and what are you going to do? Nothing.
That's great.
Because you're a stingless bee.
They couldn't even bite or anything?
No, they just stand idly by. That's their thing.
Tummies.
So, Chuck, there's a lot of... there's a lot of stuff that a bee produces. They're like pubescent children. They just produce all these different things with all these different glands all the time. They're secreting stuff all the time. But it's very useful stuff.
That's right.
And then, Chuck, you know how when you get stung, sometimes you hear or you've heard a bee will die after it stings you.
Yeah, I think most people think that all bees die when they sting you. Not true.
No, it depends on the type of stinger they have.
Yeah.
Honeybees, for the most part, except for the queen honeybee, have barbed stingers. And if a bee has a barbed stinger, it is going to stick in you. If you're a mammal, a bee can sting other insects with a barbed stinger and live after stinging repeatedly. If it stings in a mammal, we have this fat, meaty flesh that the barbed stinger hooks into. And when the bee flies away, it leaves its stinger and its abdomen and guts stuck in you.
Yeah.
And so it dies. which is why if you have a barbed stinger, you can only sting once. But some bees do have smooth stingers and can sting mammals as often as they like.
Yeah, I wonder how often that, how long that takes for the bee to die. Because, you know, they sting you and they fly away. I wonder if it's like a few minutes or a couple of hours or if they just like...
I would think pretty quick.
Go quietly and bleed out or...
Yeah, but I mean, how long does it take a bee to bleed out?
I don't know.
Or
probably not long.
Hemolymph out.
But I know when I've been stung, I see them fly away.
Yeah.
And they look like they're doing all right to me.
And right when you turn around, they just go...
I guess. I'm going to trail the next bee that stings me and follow it.
You're going to track it?
Yeah, I'm going to track it.
You totally should.
All right, so you want to talk about some juices and stuff? Some venom?
Yeah, we should talk about venom. Remember the difference between a venomous organism and a poisonous organism is venom is produced in the body.
Yeah.
Poison's outside, right?
That's right. And a bee's venom basically destroys cells. Like, it's pretty hardcore stuff. It's a good thing it's in small quantities, probably.
Mm-hmm.
I can imagine if it was larger quantities, it could be pretty destructive. But they have peptides and enzymes, break through the fat linings of the cell, destroy the mast cells, and that releases histamine. This is where we get into, like, whether or not you're allergic, you could be in big trouble.
Yeah, because histamine is part of your immune response.
Yeah, which is a good thing. You know, you want that.
Right, and histamines open the blood vessels so that you can get your antibodies, your immune cells to the site much more quickly.
Yeah.
But if you have a bee allergy, your immune system is too large. It's too big a response. Your blood vessels dilate so much that you lose blood pressure and fall over, which is called anaphylactic shock.
That's right. And that can kill people.
Yeah.
Dead. Yep. And if you are allergic to bees, you almost 100% in likelihood have an epinephrine shot with you.
Yep.
Because it's dangerous stuff. And that will constrict the blood vessels and save your life, hopefully.
Right.
If you get it in time, I imagine. It depends on the person.
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. So like we said, there's approximately 20,000 bee species under the superfamily Apodia. Or Apodia? How do you say that?
Let's go with Apodia.
Apodia?
Apodia.
And depending on the bee, you're going to have a different kind of nest. But they are similar, you know, in a lot of cases. So we'll break it down into honeybees and bumblebees. For the nesting purposes.
And for social. They're both social.
That's right.
Kind of bees.
They are.
So you've got, among honeybees, you have a perennial nest, which is always around.
That's kind of cool. They build the same nest and for life.
Yep.
I love that.
And for generations. And they build it by secreting stuff out of their glands. Because bees are like the pubescent children, human children of the... of the insect world. They're
That's right.
always secreting stuff out of their glands, but they make good use of it. And one of the things that they use it for is wax to build nests, hives.
And these are all ladies, by the way.
It's a very important point.
Yeah, these are all little women workers. And the reason why is because male bees, for the most part, are around to fornicate, and that's about it. In fact, they don't even have a lot of the parts that you need to be a real bee.
To collect pollen or nectar or anything like that. They're there to reproduce, and that's it.
Yeah, in fact, they will even get kicked out of the hive if things get a little too crowded and food is scarce.
Or winter's coming.
The women will say, all right, it's time for you guys to leave.
Yeah, you don't have to go home,
party on our
but
own.
You can't stay here.
That's right. I wonder what they do.
They probably say, I'm going to sting you if you don't get out of here.
No, I wonder what the males do, though.
But they go off and die.
Do they die
they
or do
freeze.
They form their own little, like, boys club?
I have the impression that male bees are kind of too oafish to think of that kind of thing.
Dummies.
Yeah, but so if you see a bee collecting pollen,
yeah,
in almost every species, that's a female bee. If you see a bee stinging you or feel a bee stinging you,
yeah,
that's a female because the stinger is an ovipositor, which makes it a female part.
That's right.
But as we were saying, the nests that are built and maintained and stocked, are all done by females with the honeybee.
That's right.
And it's perennial.
Yes. And in that little nest, if the queen bee the queen bee will be delivering a queen substance. It's a pheromone. And
get another secretion.
Another secretion. If the little lady bees start getting less and less of this, they'll say, you know what? We need to split up and make a new queen and a new hive. And let's just go ahead and start this process now. and let's pick a new queen and start feeding her royal jelly, another secretion, mm-hmm. and raise her right.
Right.
On this royal jelly.
So they, about half of the workers and the old queen take off and found a new hive.
I guess that's too much pressure on the new queen to start.
I guess so, yeah.
They're like, we got this place built for you.
Right.
You just grow up and take care of it.
And that's what happens. The new queen grows up and the hive basically divides like a cell into
yeah.
two.
Pretty cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah. Solitaire, or not solitaire, bumblebees.
Yeah.
They found annual nests. And basically,
I like that idea too, though. New yeah. digs every year.
It's not getting attached to something.
Sure.
Yeah. So they in the fall, the queen mates, spends the winter underground.
Mm-hmm.
In the spring, she lays some eggs that turn out to surprisingly mostly be females, if not all females.
Yeah.
And they help her build a nest. And in the summer, she lays some more eggs. Those hatch into males. Those males fly off, and all of the male bumblebees. Somehow, scientists haven't figured out how they do it. They figure they get a, they say, "Hey, we're all going to be over here to mate this Friday.
Right.
We'll see you guys there."
Yeah.
Then all the queens from all the individual nests from miles around come over, and everybody copulates.
Yep.
And then
they leave the scrunchie on the door.
Yeah. And then that's that.
Yep.
And the cycle starts anew. The female lays eggs or goes back underground for the winter.
That's right. And these are the social bees, like we said. However, less than 15% of bees are social, even though they're the ones we usually think of more as far as like hives and nests and things. My favorite are the solitary bees.
Why?
Because they're doing their own thing. My really favorite reason why is because the different ways they make their home.
Yeah.
I just think it's really cool.
Yeah, so like social bees are known from the type of hives they have. That's kind of how they're divided. But
yeah.
The way that they make their homes for solitary bees, that's a good definition.
And category. Solitary bees, they'll get together on occasion if they need to like band together for defense or something.
Mm-hmm.
But they generally do their own thing.
Right.
So some of the different ways that these guys can make homes, like carpenter bees, which are my favorites, they bore holes in wood and unpainted like raw wood.
Yeah, and they usually are like the spitting image of a bumblebee.
Yeah.
But if you see a bumblebee going into a hole in like your door jamb, that's yeah. a carpenter bee.
I like carpenter bees. I think it's cool.
Yeah, they get the little tool belt.
Yeah.
They always have a pencil behind their ear.
Yeah, and they're always late.
Yeah.
And the job is never done on time.
But they'll tell you straight, this is going to cost 2 to 3 times what I originally estimated.
Exactly. I just think it's cool that they can actually bore into the wood like that. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And they're always like perfectly little round holes too.
I know. Like. What's surprising is they use their eyes to bore. Little lasers shoot out of them.
Oh, wow. I don't think I knew that. Yeah. Tracy skipped that too.
Yeah.
There are the plasterer bees. They dig little holes in tunnels and line them with another secretion that's sort of like plaster.
Yeah.
Makes sense. The leaf cutters, what do?
They cut use leaves. those grasping claws, remember?
Yeah.
And then they bite leaves apart with their mouths and line their nests with them because they like to be nice and comfy.
Mason bees? Used to be a mason bee.
Yeah, yeah. And I would secrete something from my jaws that basically was like mortar and put sand and pebbles together
yeah.
to make a nest. That's a strong nest. This is like basically the three pigs of the bee kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
We're going from like...
I didn't think about that.
We're going from leaves to
wood.
Yeah, wood and sand. Yeah, nice. The Carter bee. They like furry, woolly parts of plants, and that's basically they're like the Bob Guccione bees.
Yeah. I bet that's a homey nest.
Yeah, they wear silk robes and stuff like that.
And then my favorite thing is when Tracy points out a few species actually will like check out an empty snail shell and say, "That looks like a very nice little apartment. I'm just going to move in there." And you want to move in? Let's just divide it up with more secretions. And you take that half. We'll make it a duplex.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
Or others will go into an old ant hill or termite hill or a wasp nest and be like, "Hello." And if they hear back, "Hello, hello, hello," they'll say, "Well, this is where I'm going to lay my eggs."
It's already built.
Yeah. And the cuckoo bee.
These guys are dumb.
They go, they're a parasitic bee, not in that they eat other bees, but that they lay their eggs in other bees' nests and just say, "Sayonara."
Yeah.
Good
and they rely on
their
pollen. It's like, I feel like they're dumb.
Yeah.
They can't figure it out on their own.
Right.
So they just kind of sneak in there in the dead of night and do their thing.
Yeah.
Sweat bees. Remember those little guys?
Very aptly named.
They are after your sweat. I thought that was sort of a wives' tale. It's not.
No. They're sweat bees.
That's right.
The orchid bee is another good example of coevolution. They think that the orchid bee, with its extremely long proboscis, basically evolved to get the nectar out of orchids, which keeps its nectar very deep in the flower blossom.
Yeah.
Evolution.
Staring you in the face. The scariest bee, Josh, is there such thing as a killer bee?
No, that's kind of a media hype. I mean, any bee, especially if you had a bee allergy,
could kill you. Yeah.
But what are
killer bees?
So back in the 50s, I think 1957 in Brazil, some apiarists, some beekeepers, imported some African honeybees, and they got loose, and they went and mated with the European honeybees that were already in the area.
Yeah.
And what you had was Africanized honeybees, which are virtually identical to European honeybees, but they are far more aggressive, especially if they think you're messing with their hive.
And I wonder
how
that happens.
Sting you.
You know, like Africans and Europeans mating, that makes them aggressive. That's just interesting.
Yeah.
How you combine those two and all of a sudden they're just pissed off.
Yeah. But then at some point the media got a hold of it as they started to approach from Brazil upward toward America.
Yeah, we have some here, right, in the States.
Yeah. They made it to Texas, Florida, I believe. Maybe
yeah.
even Georgia.
California, Arizona. I bet there's some in South Georgia.
And the media went crazy over killer bees.
That seems like a 70s thing. I sort of remember that.
I thought it was 80s.
Was it a movie or something?
Oh, I'm sure.
Like a swarmy movie?
Yeah.
I think there had to be. Or there should be.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva Presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long. But Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. Start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com.
So reproduction, the fun, sexy stuff. This is actually really fun, I think, because bees can live up to 5 years, some of them. Honeybees?
I think that's the queen.
Just the queen?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes sense. Because Tracy also said that some of them don't even live through the winter. I guess it just depends.
Right, that's why I think it was the queen that she was referring to.
Okay.
Up to 5 years
lifespan. That's amazing.
Yeah.
For an insect?
Sure.
I mean, she's well taken care of.
Yeah, she doesn't have to do a lot.
That's right. The males, like we said, they're there to deposit their male parts in. And unfortunately, they don't leave with their male parts.
Yeah, depending on the species of bee, they may, much like stinging a mammal, once they copulate. Does that work for bees?
Copulation?
Yeah.
Sure.
They leave their, like you said, their man parts in the female and die as a result. They tear their abdomen out.
Takes it more than he leaves it.
Oh, is that right?
I don't know. I just have a feeling. The female bees just seem like they're the smart ones.
Ha ha.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like I have your, you know, what's it called?
Your
not a penis.
No, it's not a penis. They're endophallus.
Okay. I've got your endophallus, and I'm not giving it back.
Exactly. And now you're dead.
That's right.
So with honeybees specifically, I think the queen bee is the only one that lays eggs. Is that correct?
No. The queen, honeybees, females will lay like a few eggs during their lifetime, but the queen bee lays thousands.
Okay. All right. So it is possible for a female honeybee to lay an egg. Okay, but for the most part,
or just a few,
carrying on the hive, that's up to the queen.
Oh yeah,
right,
big time.
And then once an egg is laid, it goes through the same stages that like a caterpillar will.
Yeah, I never knew that either. That's pretty cool.
So like you lay an egg and it hatches into a larva, which looks like a little worm, a little sick, gross white worm.
Yeah,
and it's fed by workers for a couple of days, fed royal jelly, which you said they secrete from their heads, right?
Yeah, I don't think the regular bees get the royal jelly, do they?
For the first 2 days.
Oh, for just 2 days, that's right.
If you want to make a queen, you feed that bee, you feed any female larva royal jelly the whole time.
Until it hatches.
You're raising her, yeah,
okay.
Until she spins a cocoon. So they get royal jelly a couple of days. They molt. Workers seal off the honeycomb, which is an egg chamber in this case.
Yeah, each little one.
Yeah.
Those, like, build a little door, basically.
Yeah, and it's one per. No more.
That's right.
No less. And then the larva spins a cocoon and eventually emerges as an adult. And I've heard tell that the first thing a bee does when it's born is clean out its egg chamber for the next bee.
They're very busy and tidy and, like, they've got a lot of stuff to do.
For sure.
And here's the other cool thing. Males will get a little bit larger cell, but the queen can actually decide whether or not to have a male or a female.
Yeah.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, because a queen will collect sperm enough for her lifetime.
In one shot?
In one mating season, as I understand it.
Yeah, no.
And then
you know what I mean.
She'll dole it out depending on what kind of bees the hive needs at any
That's
point.
That's amazing.
Time. So what's the magic sauce then?
How she does this?
Yeah.
She stores. All right. If she uses stored sperm to fertilize the egg, then she hatches female. If she leaves the egg unfertilized, then it's a male.
Right.
So it's up to her.
And what's crazy is this. It all depends on what kind of state the hive's in. Like, do you need more workers?
Sure.
To go gather more food?
Yeah.
Or do you need more males to reproduce? It's pretty cool.
Yeah, how they strike that balance with that tiny little brain.
Yeah.
I guess years of experience. How do they pick the queen, too? Do you know that?
I don't know.
Is it just random and then they start them on the royal jelly and that just gets the process
That's
going?
That's the impression that I have. That as long as it's a fertilized egg that will become a female, then I think you could feed any of those royal jelly.
It's probably one of the queen's daughters, though, as opposed to one of the few of the others.
Right.
Don't you think? To keep that royal bloodline intact?
Yeah, I would think.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just a guess. I bet somebody knows.
I mean, what if they accidentally raised a cuckoo bee's egg as a queen?
Jeez.
What a colossal nightmare that would be.
Has
be like
Pixar
Kathy
made
Geist
a movie like that?
Over or something.
Okay, so the little eggs hatch and the little worker bees, they have different jobs according to their age. But they are going to be taking care of the young at this point. They're going to be feeding them pollen or bee bread, which is pollen and nectar mixed together. It sounds delicious, actually.
It is. And, you know, a lot of people think that bees are just only after nectar. No, they collect pollen on purpose as well, and they use it to make bee bread.
That's right.
And bee bread does sound very delicious.
Doesn't it? And so as you get older, though, you're going to have different jobs. And at first, you're a nurse, and then, like you said, once you get a little older, you might be a maid or a butler and clean. Oh, not a butler, I guess a maid.
Right.
And start cleaning out the other, the other empty cells.
Yeah.
Even though you said you're supposed to do it yourself, I guess they, you know, some are lazy, maybe.
Sure.
Some other worker bee has to come behind and take care of their business.
And they're like, I'm going to keep my eye on you.
Exactly. And then they also learn at that point how to forage for food, and make honey, and this is where things get kind of fun.
Those are the oldest ones.
Yeah.
The oldest ones are the scouts, and the ones that forage are the oldest bees in the hive.
Yeah, the followers.
Yeah. And I want to say real quick, too, first, Chuck, that was social bee reproduction.
Yeah.
Solitary bee reproduction is very sad sometimes. In some species, the mother lays an egg, seals up this whatever she's used to as the nest with a little bee bread, little honey, whatever, and then takes off and dies.
And they never see their little baby bee?
Nope.
That is sad.
Isn't that sad?
It is. So bees find their food in pretty remarkable ways. They can smell, like, really, really well.
Yeah.
And like we said, they can recognize color patterns and things, and they have their solar compass. So this allows them to see where the sun is. They also have an internal clock, so when they go out, the scout bees, and find the food, they know, well, the sun's right there, and I flew 300 yards. Now I'm flying back, and the sun is right there. So they can actually use those together to pinpoint for the others where the food is, because they're going back to tell everyone,
right,
hey, and they, you know, let them taste, like, this is what you're after. Mm-hmm. Taste a little bit of this, and now come with me by way of this dance.
Right.
Literally.
So they can remember and judge and measure where they went, where the food source was, but then they also can communicate it, like you said, through dancing. And if food's really close by, they'll just basically run up a vertical wall of a honeycomb, which they call the dance floor.
Yeah.
And we, not just us.
No, it's called, like, the dance floor.
That's what people who study bees call it. And they basically just run up or down in the direction of the food source in relation to the sun, not in relation to the hive.
Yeah.
When they go out, they'll be like, oh, okay, the sun's over here. It's in this direction. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's called a round dance.
Right.
And they depend on their sense of smell, because they don't get super specific with the round dance.
Yeah.
They're like, well, I'll get you out there, and then you'll know. Trust me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because bees can smell from meters away, which is, that's a really far distance, considering how small bees are.
Sure.
And when the food's a little further away, they do the actual waggle dance. And, basically this is running again in a line in the direction of the food, and then making these little, circles in opposing directions at the end of the line. So it'll run up and then go to the left in a circle, and then run up and then go to the right in a circle. And that tells everybody where the food is, and then the quality of the food source. How tight the circle is, I think, kind of says it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Or if it's a big loping circle, maybe they're like, it's okay.
Yeah.
We've had better. And then the bee's also flapping its wings at the same time. And all the bees that have gathered around, like you said, are called followers.
Yeah.
They're the oldest ones in the hive. And they're taking all this information in. And a specific group of them are going to be directly behind the bee while it's doing this waggle dance.
Feeling
that
wind.
Flapping its wings. And that wind is going to tell them about how long they need to travel for. And then all the bees take off. When they get to about the right area, they go into like a search pattern until somebody finds it, and then they start making trips back and forth.
Yep. I mean, they're delivering a lot of information here.
Yeah.
Very specific information. And they make about a dozen trips. Each bee can carry about half her weight in pollen or nectar, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then when they come back to unload the stuff, there's more communication going on, because the little unloaders that are back at the hive will behave differently according to how much more food they need. If they're like, come on, give it, that
right.
means keep going. And if they're like, I guess I'll take it since you brought it, but we're really doing okay.
Right, and
that
after
means
that,
they're stocked up.
They're like, all right, well, I'm not going to get any more if you're just not going to be excited about it any longer.
Let's just find some men to have sex with.
Right. Or let's turn this nectar into honey.
Yes.
Just because for storage purposes, honey has far less volume than nectar. It's basically concentrated nectar.
Yeah.
So you can store more of it, right?
That's right. So they transform nectar into honey in a kind of a gross way. They regurgitate it over and over and over, which evaporates the water out of it. And they also flap their little wings to, I guess, use air to do the same thing. And so honey is a bunch of regurgitated bee stuff, because
it's bee vomit.
Yeah, I mean, there's bee stuff in there as well.
Yeah, it's not just nectar.
Yeah.
Like, they're sucking the moisture out, but they're also adding enzymes and stuff.
Yeah, their own
from
junk.
Their body to make honey. It's not just dehydrated nectar. It's honey's a different thing that's made by this stuff.
That's right.
But it has some pretty amazing properties to it. One of the things that's added during this regurgitation process is called glucose oxidase.
Yeah.
And when it's fed to the young, it's broken down into glucose, which gives them tons of energy
because
there's a lot of sugar calories in honey. But it's also broken down into hydrogen peroxide, which is one of the things that gives honey its antimicrobial and antibacterial properties.
That's right. And that's why humans have been using it and eating it for thousands and thousands of years to treat wounds occasionally.
Yeah.
It can be good in a pinch if you're a survivalist.
Yeah, especially an open wound. You've heard that honey is it keeps forever, basically. Obviously, it doesn't keep forever, but it'll keep a very long time.
Yeah.
That's one of the big reasons. Another reason is that it has a high osmotic pressure, and it's hygroscopic, which means it wicks moisture out of the air around it.
Yeah.
And since it has a high osmotic pressure, it does it really strongly.
Uh-huh.
So if you're a little nice... moisturized piece of bacteria, and you come in contact with honey, it's going to suck the moisture out of you and kill you. So antibacterial.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. If you come across a beehive in the wintertime and they just seem like they're all in there asleep, hibernating, not so. They're still pretty active. They will leave the hive to poop and pee because, well, I guess they don't pee, but they leave the hive to do their business because they don't want to go in their little cell. Which, again, they're very tidy little creatures.
Yeah.
They know not to, like, wallow in their own feces.
Right.
Not feces, but bee
poop
scat.
Bee scat.
But they are still pretty busy in there because they have to keep warm. So they, and especially keep the queen warm, and so they tremble, just like humans kind of shiver.
Mm-hmm.
Just to increase the warmth. And then in the summertime, they will flap their wings to kind of keep things climate controlled on the cooler side.
And drip water on the honeycomb,
too. Oh, yeah.
Too.
That's amazing.
They are pretty amazing creatures, if you ask me.
And I still hate them.
Yeah. Oh, we should also say real quick that while bee honey has a lot of antibacterial properties and antimicrobial properties, one particular bacteria that is impervious to honey's defenses is Clostridium botulinum, a.k.a. botulism.
Oh, yeah.
The bacteria that gives you botulism. And since it's soil-borne, it's very easy for... C. botulinum to get into honey. It's
right.
In honey. Any honey you eat is going to have it in there. It's not in large enough measure to affect us, but it could be life-threatening to a baby, which is why they always say, like, never give honey to a baby.
Oh, yeah?
Ever.
Huh. You know, I don't think we mentioned either. The honey, you know, you have different flavors of honey. That depends on what the bee has been, what kind of flowers the bee's been hanging out with.
Yeah.
So, like, orange blossom honey is...
Or clover. Or
is orange blossom and clover. So I never knew that either. Makes perfect sense.
Bees.
I thought it was like an added flavor or something. You know, like we have this
yellow
honey.
Number five.
Yeah, whatever. You know, we'll make different flavors of
yeah,
honey. I didn't know it was like naturally occurring.
You're like, when are they going to make bacon honey?
Oh, man. I bet that's good.
Oh, you just cook some bacon, put some honey on it.
Yum.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today. Hey, everybody. If you're building a deck at work and you want to supercharge it, check out Canva presentations. Work docs have been the same for too long, but Canva docs are different. They're visual. They grab readers' attention with images, charts, tables, and videos playable right in the doc. Plus, docs don't have to be just words on a page. You can make your docs pop with Canva docs.
That's right. And Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, HR, ops, marketing, and more, Canva presentations can be the solution for you. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it.
Canva presentations might be the most visually impressive presentations you'll ever use. You start with a stunning template, use it as a springboard for your design, adding images, graphics, charts, data visualizations, all from a massive media library. It's super easy to wow any audience with Canva presentations.
So start designing today at canva.com, designed for work. That's canva.com. And you know, we did a podcast on colony collapse disorder.
Yeah.
So I would encourage people to go listen to that as well.
It was a good one.
In the archives.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else.
Okay. So that's bees. If you want to learn more about bees, you should go check out this very thorough article on howstuffworks.com. You can type in bees and it will bring it up and you can learn even more, including about colony collapse disorder.
Yeah.
And beekeeping as well.
Yeah. Maybe we should do beekeeping one day.
Okay.
I don't mean a podcast. I mean just start our own little side business.
Yeah, haven't we already? Don't you have like a smoker and everything?
Yeah, TV will tell you I do.
Okay, so since I said search bar, I think I did, at howstuffworks.com, then that means it's time for, of course, listener mail.
All right, Josh, I'm going to call this correction from a librarian. Remember we did our book banning podcast?
Shh.
That's her correction.
Yeah,
that's all she said. And that is from Carly. Thank you, Carly. Hey, guys, love your show. As a librarian, I was excited to hear what you had to say about book banning. However, I'd like to clear up a misconception about the role of a librarian in banning books. You said if a customer or patron approaches a librarian and wants a book banned, it is up to the librarian to decide. This could not be further from the truth in 99% of the cases. Public libraries are run by boards of trustees, volunteers, and the community who set policies for the library. These community members are not librarians, and when someone wants a book removed, they must fill out a form and submit it to the board. Then the board reviews the material and the objection. Board of Trustees. It is the Board of Trustees who decides whether or not to remove the item. The Board of Trustees may consult with others, like librarians, review sources, the community at large, etc., but it is not the librarian who decides whether to ban the book. I hope to hear this corrected, she says.
Bam.
Because it is unfortunate to hear one's profession misconstrued in an international public forum. So that is from Carly. And she says, thanks and keep up the good work.
Yeah.
And shush.
Thanks, Carly. Appreciate that. I think everybody got that. It's pretty clear and concise.
Yeah.
It is not librarians in most cases who carry out the banning.
It sounds like she might have been yelled at by somebody because of our podcast.
Maybe. Well, she just yelled at us.
No, she was nice.
If you have a correction for us, we are always very much open to those. We want to hear them so we can pass them along because we like correcting ourselves and getting things right. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. And you can send us a good old-fashioned email at StuffPodcast@Discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the 2012 Toyota Camry.
Are you thirsty? Well, Richard's rainwater is caught clean before it even hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of still rainwater or the cold pressured bubbles of sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And for a coupon, text STUFF to 251-292-8887 and receive $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's Rainwater. Hey everybody, if you've been looking for love at first sight, it's closer than you think. It can be found at your local shelter. So, this June 7th to June 9th, join the Pedigree Adoption Drive, and the Pedigree brand will reimburse your dog adoption fees nationwide. Pedigree knows that bringing a dog into your home not only opens their heart, it can open yours too. Visit pedigree.com/adoption-drive to learn more and see full terms and conditions.